Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. It is Saturday afternoon, second round of the NCAA tournament. Last night, Xavier defeated Weber State 71-53. I've got the legend Brian Snow and Dan on the line to talk about the win. Guys, start here. I mean, I think yesterday was an all-time great day of the NCAA tournament. What were your overall thoughts on the day? Not so much Xavier's win, but just the day in general.
It was phenomenal. You know, anytime you have two endings like we saw to close the night, that was amazing. The Notre Dame-Michigan game was great. You had Adam Woodbury's push-off for a bucket to end that game. Then, of course, the Michigan State situation. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal day in March.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites was walk up for Stephen F. Austin and the monster game he had to beat the Sweet 16 bound press Virginia. But I think the tribute to Xavier out of all this is after a day and a half of a lot of mayhem and craziness and a couple games going on around him that were mayhem and craziness, Xavier kind of just took care of business in a relatively drama free way. And they roll on to Sunday night's game.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at how things played out, and so much of how this Xavier team performs is about matchups, obviously, and the matchups played out favorably. But you look at this game in general, and if it was a team that they wouldn't have matched up so well with, the individual performances, you kind of look at it and you're like, man, that probably wouldn't have been enough to get it done against, say, a Seton Hall or someone like that, because, you know, Edmund Sumner really kind of had a bad game, and Trayvon didn't really get it going offensively. Miles didn't get it going offensively. None of their perimeter players were really on, quote unquote. I thought both James was obviously excellent and Jalen was pretty good, but to me, it wasn't a great performance by any means, but just kind of, in some ways, I think for Xavier fans, it maybe gave them a refresher and reminded them how good this team was in non-conference before we got to the end of the Big East season, where they were grinding through against tough opponents and opponents that they didn't match up all that well against.
Yeah, I would say the adjective to describe it was workmanlike. You know, it was never – sure, it got down to seven that one time before Jalen had the monster dunk thing, but
that man has a family. Yeah.
Like that thing, you know, it was never in doubt. I mean, at no point did you say like, hey, you know, it's edge of your seat time. So it was a working like performance. They were a little bit sloppy with turnovers and stretches and missed shots a little bit, but you know, that's going to happen. And they did what they needed to do. And you just kind of check off the box and move on to see another day.
Yeah. It almost felt like after they got out, I can't remember what exactly the score got to, but like 23-6 maybe at the beginning of the game. Cause I thought one of the things that was huge for Xavier, not only was that they were making shots at the beginning of the game, they made a couple threes in the early going, and then they were kind of making their living on second shots for most of the first half. I mean, they scored a lot. They seemed pretty efficient offensively, but it was mostly offensive rebounds. But I thought they were really locked in on defense for maybe the first, let's say, 12 minutes of the game. And so in the second half, when they kind of reverted to the sort of trading baskets situation that we've seen in the past, and Weber got some momentum going, it was really surprising because they had so almost effortlessly slammed the door shut on them in the first 10, 12 minutes of the game. But ultimately, Rick, you mentioned James Farr. I think the thing that we saw in this game more so than maybe we've seen in the past is that both James and Jalen just had a size and speed advantage on all their matchups. I mean, Ballenboy is a good player, but I don't think that he really muscled up with those guys very well. And they just bullied them in the second half. I mean, every time Xavier needed a basket, they just took it straight to the block, and James and Jalen would get a dunk or a relatively easy hook shot, or, you know, they kick it back out for a missed jumper that leads to a layup. So, you know, I mean, I think X exploited the advantages they had against Weber State pretty well, and that defensive run they had at the beginning of the game I thought was kind of what told the tale.
Yeah, and Dan, when they were trading baskets, I think Weber made probably four shots in a row that there's just nothing you can do about. It was like they weren't even looking at the rim. I mean, that's going to happen in a stretch of a basketball game.
Yeah, Xavier had 14 second chance points, just to spell out that point that you were making, Dan, there in the first half. The 14-5 in second chance points during the first half. Looking at the defensive performance, I thought Remy Abel, we kind of called this before the game, there are certain guys that it's what he does, and guys who want to run off of screens and try to wear you down and just get free from you. He's very good at defending. For whatever reason, he has the best part about his skill set defensively is chasing dudes ragged around screens, and he did that exceptionally well. And when Weber State's offense was basically predicated on finding ways to free Singlin, and he wasn't ever able to get free, I thought for the entire first half, it kept their offense out of sync to where they were playing 25 feet from the basket, and they get down to the end of the shot clock, and then they just had to launch a bad shot. So, you know, Remy obviously is not always the standout guy on this team. He's often one of the forgotten pieces, and as we got later into the season, you even saw some games where he'd play a few minutes in the first half and then barely get off the bench the rest of the game. And for him to step up in that way in the NCAA tournament, you had to be pretty happy for a senior with the way he played in that game, Dan.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you hit everything there. It was sort of like the Kellen Dunham defense, basically. Xavier fans, you know, generally as a group, we all think Kellen Dunham is terrible, and it's not, and that isn't true. You watch Kellen Dunham play against other teams, and he's really good. But it's just that Xavier's had in D, and then in Remy, two guys that just excel at the particular type of defense. And Singlin's kind of seems like a poor man's Dunham in some ways. And he was just completely a non-factor. But and also, how about Remy hitting all three of his threes and making a big contribution on the offensive end? You talked about some of the backcourt guys not really contributing offensively. Remy had 11 points, which is a lot more than we've gotten accustomed to getting from him, especially in the second half of the season.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't really talk about his offense at all, and that is where some of the production, the perimeter production, was made up, was in the fact that Remy was 3-for-3 from beyond the arc. And again, you've seen it so many times with different players, whether it's guys that had great senior seasons or whether it's guys that were maybe even a little disappointing. And I don't know that you'd call Remy disappointing. He just played his role for this team all season, but it wasn't a scoring one. But so often we see it get into tournament time and seniors just – they know it's they play with confidence. They know it's their last shot, and certainly that was the case with Remy last night. Kaiser Gates is a guy I kind of wanted to hit on real quick. You know, he was 3-for-3. Really, I think one of them was a tip-in by Weber State, though, that he got credited for. But hit a big three when Xavier was kind of maybe hitting their first little lull there in the first half. They raced out to a big lead early, then hit a little bit of a lull, and he hit that three to kind of get them going again and give them some energy. I thought his defense was excellent. Kaiser Gates just continues to look like a piece that's going to be a big factor down the line, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely that one bucket wasn't his, but he plays good defense. He's starting to rebound better, and when he gets stronger, he's really going to rebound. And I think we could certainly see him play a big role against Wisconsin, given that they do have Nigel Hayes, who clearly the best matchup for Xavier with Nigel Hayes is Kaiser Gates.
Yeah, no question about that. And I think the most impressive part about Kaiser is that, you know, you see him hit that three. Clearly he has the confidence and feels that he could do more offensively, but he never really steps outside of his role on this current team. You know, you don't see him making bad decisions or forcing shots. He lets it come to him and understands that he's out there to be versatile defensively. And then if his chance comes to him, he's confident enough to let it fly. So I think that's just a really mature approach to the game right now for the freshman. And it's interesting to see what he does going forward. We'll talk a little bit more about that Wisconsin matchup, but let's wrap up the Weber State game here. Just final thoughts from this. You know, you guys talked about the Jalen Reynolds dunk. I think that dunk has to rank up there with the top Jalen, my favorite Jalen dunks in the history. I mean, you've got the off-the-backboard one from D. You've had a couple others like this where it's right on guys, but this one was just so unexpected. He looked like it was the end of Space Jam Michael Jordan arm, where his right arm just kept extending from his body, even though he was about 6 feet away from the rim when he threw that down. And then maybe my favorite part of it is if you watch in like the replay, especially in Vine, where it kind of keeps looping back, it looks like there was like a seismic boom after he dunked it by the way he fell over onto his back by the bench. Like, he couldn't possibly stand up after he landed on his feet, and he just was sent flying back onto his back. I loved that part of it too.
That's a timely Space Jam reference there.
It was just, I don't know how he reached the rim. Like, that was incredible.
Yeah, I think there was one rip and go against Arizona last year in the Sweet 16. Yep. It was one of those that just made your eyes pop out because he took like two pros directly to the rack with him. But
he had that spin move dunk on Tarzewski. Remember where he's driving him, spin, and two-handed dunked on top of him? That was awesome too. So he had a couple big moments in the NCAA tournament, and that's another thing to watch. I mean, Jalen's been that way. He led the team, you know, in returning players. He was the leading returning scorer in NCAA tournament because he played well last year. So this has kind of been the time where he's shined. I wouldn't be surprised to see him continue playing well.
Can I ask one question before we move on?
Sure.
on the subject of Jalen? Are we to take – is there any significance at all to the comments he made? Like, I assume the answer is no. But the comments that he made about potentially coming back to school in the Enquirer profile, and then also I think Quentin Gooden tweeted something about how he's looking forward to playing with Jalen next year, which either, you know, he may just be misinformed. But are we to take anything from that? Is there any possibility of Jalen coming back next year, or do we still think it's 100% he's gone?
Well, I mean, possibility, sure, but I would downgrade it from 99% to 95.5% that he's gone.
Okay.
Here would be my thing on this. The Quentin thing...
He just doesn't know.
The coaches don't tell the incoming recruits who's going to be leaving early. You know, I mean, so that, he has no idea. As for what Jalen is saying in the press, I'm not going to dispute what Jalen's plans are. You know, if he has plans and that's what he's telling people right now, I'm fine with that. And I'm not going to say he's wrong about his own plans. But you guys have heard my take all season. I would say that hasn't changed on my end at all. So take it for what it's worth at this point, and we'll just let it play out, I would say.
Okay. So Wisconsin, this is they beat Pittsburgh. They beat Pittsburgh last night in something that probably is considered basketball. I even think those two teams would have been kicked out of the GCL for that spectacle.
Let's not get carried away.
47-43, lowest scoring game in the tournament, as Snow and I were discussing on Twitter, I believe since the 1996 Princeton-UCLA game, which was with the 45-second shot clock. So in the 35-second shot clock era, the 30-second shot clock era, that's definitely the lowest scoring. That was a rock fight. Everybody that went there should have gotten a engraved watch, like a war veteran at the end of watching that game. People that had to watch that for a living, I actually pity them. Usually I'm happy to envy those people who get to watch NCAA tournament games for a living, but that I think they definitely earned their paychecks at that one. So beyond that, Snow, you watch a lot of the Big Ten. You're sort of in the heart of Big Ten country. What can you tell us about the Badgers?
You know, they're miserable to watch, I'll be honest. But they have a couple guys that they run everything through. They're back to running the old swing offense. They haven't really run the swing offense in about 4 years, which people will live in denial about. So now it's a lot of false motion. They just kind of dribble out the shot clock till there's 10 seconds. Their goal is to get the defense moving. And then either Bronson Koenig or Nigel Hayes is asked to make a play. And then sometimes they'll pick and pop with Vito Brown or a dump in to Ethan Happ. But they're not real complex man-to-man defense, almost all over the board. Not very deep. Maybe go six guys. So if you can get them into foul trouble, they're in trouble. But the thing is, they don't foul. So they're just kind of a standard Wisconsin slow plodding team.
Yes. No, one of the things, just looking at the individual matchups that you and I were talking about, and I think you posted on the board, The most interesting thing is, do you go with Remy Abel on Bronson Koenig or Nigel Hayes? Now, you think, and I think a lot of this is because Xavier's not going to, before the game, say, oh, yeah, we've got to adjust our lineup to your personnel. We'll see what happens first, and you can adjust to ours if we're scoring the ball or whatever. But so if they start out with their typical smaller lineup with Trayvon at the four, you think we will see Nigel Hayes being guarded by Remy Abel, despite the fact that he'd be giving up about 4 inches and 30 pounds, correct?
Yeah, because what are you going to do? Who are you going to put on Vito Brown if you don't? So, right. One thing they will do is they're going to treat Vito Brown as the four, and they're probably going to switch everything, is my guess, how they choose to do it. Kind of what they do against the DePaul Brorings when Tommy Hamilton's in the game. They treat him as the four and switch, and because Vito Brown can't really hurt you down low. He can hurt you in pick and pop. And he's a good rebounder. He's not a great rebounder. So even if a guard gets switched onto him, I think they feel that they'll be able to hold their own.
I kind of expect that we will see Xavier go to a bigger lineup like we did last night against Weber State, where Trayvon becomes the three and you play both of the bigs together. At that point, do you expect to see more Trayvon on Nigel Hayes?
I think they'll go 1-3-1 at that point. Because while Wisconsin's a good – they're an average to good shooting team from three. I think they're about 35% as a team. But you can pick your spots with those guys. But still, I would guess Xavier really tries to impose their will and says, all right, you pick who's guarding Remy Abel. You pick who's guarding Trayvon Blewett. You pick who's guarding J.P. McCura. And you tell us how you're going to stop us. We'll figure out how to stop you because our guys are better than yours.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you look at the game we had to watch last night, and I think Dan posted, you know, this Xavier-Wisconsin matchup essentially becomes you score 60 points and Wisconsin probably isn't going to be able to hang, and not many teams are holding Xavier, you know, under 70 points this year, much less keeping them down around 60. So I think I agree with you. You have to like Xavier's advantages if they just line them up and say, we've got the better talent. I think the toughest matchup for Xavier in this one is Ethan Happ, to me. Like, just because I think he's a guy that could definitely get Jalen in foul trouble, and I don't know that James can really guard him out on the floor. He's good at driving guys from 17, 20 feet out, and has great feet with his post moves. What do you think about the Ethan Happ matchup for Xavier?
I think they're going to annihilate him.
Really?
He struggles with length and athleticism. I think he's going to be in for a long, long day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching the Pitt Wisconsin game, I made the point to Rick. I texted Rick and I was like, you know, I have more concern about Weber State pulling some kind of one shining moment craziness than I do about Xavier going up straight up against Wisconsin, because I don't know. It seems weird to say, given that, you know, the line's been bet down to 4.5. You know, Pomeroy, Sagarin, all the analytics have Xavier's maybe a 5-point favorite, 4 to 5-point favorite. But this feels like a game that Xavier, as long as they don't completely tank, should win, and probably should win comfortably. Maybe I'm ridiculously overconfident, but I don't know. I just look at that team and I'm like, how are they gonna score enough points to beat Xavier?
Yeah, to me this is almost a Butler matchup for Xavier. Like, it's just like, I don't see how Wisconsin, unless Xavier pulls a 1-for-21 from three type of situation, I just don't see the way the matchups work. I don't like how this works for Wisconsin.
So, Snow, if there is a guy to worry about, I mean, Nigel's their best player. Is it Nigel? Okay.
It's Nigel, because he does provide a matchup problem in that, you know, he can go to the block and Xavier's going to have a smaller guy on him most of the time, you would have to think. So he can go to the block. He's a pretty good athlete. And, you know, he's shown capabilities of making shots in the past, even though I think he's 29% from three this year. So if he has a hot shooting day, he can present some problems. I think he's really the only one. I think Edmund's length is really, really going to bother Koenig. And then Showalter's just a guy. Yeah. Vito Brown can hit the occasional three, but he's just a guy. Hap's solid, but he struggles with the physicality. And Xavier's just going to be running humans at him. And it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I agree. I really like Hap offensively, but I completely agree that with Xavier's depth and experience and just grown manness compared to him being, you know, not exactly the toughest dude as a freshman right now, I think that is going to probably overwhelm him in the paint.
Let's look at the different side of the coin. How does Xavier lose this game? That's one of the thing that I kind of come back to is I remember watching the Mike Bray's teams when they ran the burn offense, and when they would get down, which isn't identical obviously to what Wisconsin does, but you kind it kind of has the same result. And I just remember that there were games where you'd get to like the 6 minute mark and it'd be a tie game, and you could almost see the team that was playing Notre Dame tense up a little bit because you could see them kind of counting the possessions in their head, knowing that every single one has to be right because you know they're not going to see the ball for another 35 seconds. So I guess, yeah, the bad shooting night, and then maybe if Wisconsin can turn it into a rock fight and X loses some of their confidence, you know, they really haven't been in a game like that since maybe the UC game where it's a low-scoring, kind of long possession, knockout, drag-out affair. So that I guess is the doomsday scenario for me.
Well,
they're going to have to fight boredom. There's no question about that. Whereas, like, you know, Wisconsin takes 30 seconds and you're bored out of your mind. Like, you don't just launch a quick semi-good shot three off of one pass, and then Wisconsin gets it again. So they will have to fight boredom.
Right, that's the thing. Xavier is going to have to be careful and be sound in their decision making because they want rhythm so bad offensively. They want to play fast. They want to get the feel of it and go up and down a little bit and open the court. And you're right. If they're not hitting shots and Wisconsin is able to slow this down to a drag, then it keeps Xavier from getting in that rhythm. And I do think that is the potential doomsday scenario. But even in those possessions, I still think Wisconsin's going to struggle just as much to score in that low-scoring game as Xavier, and Xavier will still win out. Go ahead, Dan.
No, that's basically exactly what I was going to say. Offensively, I think Xavier's got to be – you can never stop being aggressive, but there's got to be – you have to almost be patiently aggressive. You know, you can't just snap the first half chance that you get just because you're bored and you haven't had the ball. You know, they still need to work through their offense. They still need to rotate the ball. They still need to be patient and get the ball down in the low block and do the things they do well. Because we've seen if there is an Achilles heel with this team, and I think even in the scouting report, you know how they do those anonymous scouting reports, I think Luke Wynn does them on SI.com. Somebody from the league, when they talked about Xavier, they said, you know, Xavier, you can get them to take quick, you know, not necessarily bad shots, but not great shots. You can heat them up a little bit and get them to do that, and in those cases they become far less efficient offensively. So that's got to be something that X has got to avoid. And I thought they did a pretty good job of that for most of the Weber State game, although there were a couple spells where they get in a 3 or 4 possession rut. But I thought they did pretty well with that, with just sort of going back to basics, you know, solid inbounds plays, getting the ball to the low block, and then making the open looks when they got them.
Yeah, my final point on that would be, while all this sounds great for Wisconsin, the problem with it is, even when you're good defensively, is that if you go through a 4 or 5 possession drought where you're not scoring, it's just really hard to keep the Xavier team from doing what they want to do offensively. When you're trying to match up in transition and everything, if you're not scoring baskets and setting your defense, Xavier typically finds a way to take advantage of that. Snow, do you have any final thoughts on the Wisconsin matchup?
You know, it's the matchup Xavier... You know, no one wants to play against Wisconsin just because your guys might lose focus and it's not very much fun. But matchup wise, this is what Xavier wanted, and Xavier has to feel good. It's like, you know, we're Wisconsin away from getting to the Sweet 16. That a Big Ten team with 11 losses or whatever, like, it's tough to be in a better spot than that.
Real quick, just
that's the nice thing about getting that 2 seed, man, is you don't need an upset to get a winnable second-round game, and this is definitely a winnable second-round game.
Real quick, just looking ahead, you know, Wisconsin game being what it is, we understand that, but we can look ahead. We're not the team. Notre Dame, Stephen F. Austin are going to be playing on the other side. Stephen F. Austin upset West Virginia. Notre Dame did kind of what we expected. Snow, I still think Notre Dame gets through, and Demetrius Jackson is a little bit of a problem for Xavier. It's not a perfect matchup, but other than that, you kind of like the way they would match up with Notre Dame. Any thoughts on how it's playing out there on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting what they want again. You know, Notre Dame, you know, losing West Virginia losing is it, that was their toughest matchup on in that pod was West Virginia, and West Virginia lost. Stephen F. Austin's pressure can apply some problems. Demetrius Jackson can apply some problems, but let's not turn Demetrius Jackson into Allen Iverson.
Right.
You know, he's a good player. So, and Notre Dame doesn't guard anybody, and Xavier scores a lot. So, good matchup.
Dan, any final things before we wrap it up here?
I'm looking forward to Indiana, Kentucky today. That's my that's one of those like sort of you can't lose games, because either people are just going to be absolutely crushing Tom Crean on Twitter, or Kentucky loses, which is never bad. So
the Cats.
Looking forward to that one.
Okay. Cats. Yeah, the meltdown on either fan base will be quite enjoyable, especially while Xavier fans are drinking and knowing that they are playing tomorrow. So.
By the way, your comment about the how the pregame show for UK games that tip off after 9 o'clock is basically should basically be national television or national radio is was spot on.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I drove to pick up some carryout, and just listening to the call-ins were just amazing. Hey, Oscar, I just want to know, has Cal changed his defense? He's been playing man-to-man all 30 years, ever since he's been at UMass. Yeah, but has he changed it? Well, they're certainly not quite as good as they were when they had Anthony Davis and some other guys in there. I think he's changed it, if you ask me. Okay, thanks for the call. It's unbelievable, people.
But how have we not seen a Twitter or Instagram picture of the DePaul shirt?
Oh, I tweeted it out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and check it out.
I tweeted it out when we got there.
Because it's kind of weird because the logo is black and gray, because that was the cheapest one that my brother-in-law could get off Amazon. So yeah, it's not quite the glorious like bright red that I was hoping for. But I still think Rick needs to work on his old buddy Rick Carter over at DePaul and get some official memorabilia, maybe a Tommy Hamilton gamer.
Yeah, it's monochrome. It's like a mix of a Providence DePaul shirt. But I think I am going somewhere to watch the UK game, so I plan on wearing that into the bar tonight. So I will let you know how that goes.
Hashtag nice.
You've been listening to another edition of the Dated Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan and the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.